So, from the way it looks, we're changing gears a little bit on the topic of this session. All the previous talks have been about consuming or intake or how we measure intake, guidelines for measuring intake. But Dr. Inns asked me to talk about some of the work I've done on stayability. Which is another efficiency trait. So if you were with Mike McNeil's in Mike McNeil's session this morning, he did a lot of hammering on stayability, on how some of the shortcomings of stayability. I don't necessarily agree with everything he said, but he does have some points. All right, does this work? There we go. So on my talk today, the discussion was heterosis of stayability, and I just figured I would just step back a little bit and just give a brief overview on what heterosis is. You know, I've been coming to BIF for 12 years now, I believe, and it seems every year there are discussions on heterosis. I just thought it was appropriate at this time to just take a step back and say, what exactly are we referring to when we talk about heterosis? How do we measure heterosis in a trait? And that sort of thing. And then, obviously, stayability, and the stayability is a measure of cow productivity, and then the influence of crossbreeding on stayability. So going all the way back to these first two comments have been taken out of Rick Borden's Understanding Animal Breeding book, these definitions for hybrid vigor or heterosis. You know, you hear these two words used interchangeably, but they're essentially the same. They refer to the same thing, and what they're really trying to get at is an increase in performance of crossbred individuals relative to that of the average of their purebred parents. Okay, so and then he goes on and says that it's essentially an undoing of inbreeding depression. Okay, and this is kind of true. You see this in a lot of different species. I don't necessarily see it much in beef cattle, but if you look at dogs, for instance, purebred dogs have a lot of problems associated with their different breeds, and different breeds have different problems. But you get that sort of mutt from the animal shelter, from the pound, the mutt that shows up, they're around forever, you know, and that's that crossbreeding, that's that hybrid vigor, that undoing of all of these inbreeding problems that we see. Hybrid vigor is really most notable, has their most notable trait increases for lowly heritable traits, for one, and then our fertility and our survivability traits. So traits like longevity, traits like heifer pregnancy, traits like stayability. So as animal breeders or as geneticists, we really like to throw an equation on everything we see. You know, we give us a phenotype and we like to sit down and throw an equation on to identify what this means to us. So if we take this equation for a phenotype here, and P represents a phenotype, so any sort of phenotype you can collect, whether it's birth weight, weaning weight, you know, or in this instance, stayability, we say that phenotype is equal to some sort of mean, you know, whether it's a contemporary group mean, and that's typically what we're referring to, plus a breeding value or some additive genetic value, okay? Now, this additive genetic value is where we get our estimated breeding value or our estimated our EPDs, which is half of that value, plus some sort of gene combination value. Now, this gene combination value are really gene interactions, okay? It's not the genes that are present in the individual, but it's the genes that, how they pair up or how they interact. It's the pairs of genes that we're really interested in when we talk about hybrid vigor, okay? Gene combination value is non-additive because we're looking at the pairing, but what we're essentially doing when we make a crossbred animal is, if you look at the bottom here, we're trying to increase heterozygosity. So essentially, if you cross two purebred lines, you're going to increase overall heterozygosity in the resulting offspring. And then we report these values as heterosis values, okay? So I pulled some literature estimates of heterosis for some common traits. If you look at the slide here, starting with birth weight, we've got weaning weight, feed conversion, yearling weight, Those are ranging anywhere from 3 to 6 percent. So an F1 individual, so if you look at birth weight, or let's look at yearling weight, an F1 individual, okay, the F1 individual is going to express the most heterosis or have the most heterozygosity, and they're going to have a 6% increase in performance over the straight bred parents, okay? So we get down and you start looking at some of our survival traits, some of our fertility traits, such as cow weaning weight per cow exposed, cow lifetime productivity and stability. You know, these traits, we're seeing a much larger increase in heterosis associated with those, ranging anywhere from 12 to 25%. So that's a 25% increase over the straight bred animal. So stability, my next topic is really to introduce stability. Stability was initially defined as the probability of surviving to a specific age given the opportunity to reach that age, okay? But what it essentially really is, it's kind of an overall or system-wide measure of cow efficiency. You know, the initial idea behind the development of stability, and Warren Snelling did a lot of the initial work associated with stability back in the mid-90s, that these cows needed to remain in production long enough to generate enough revenue to offset the costs of their development and maintenance. And then they found this level. So they needed to stay in the herd until 6 years of age or to produce 5 calves. Okay. Now this 5 calf, this number is a number that's covering her own profitability, but it's also they have to have a break-even point. You have to have enough cows to pass the break-even point to offset those ones that don't make it. And this is a large value. I mean, this is a large portion of a lot of our maternal indexes that we see. Being at CSU, I have the opportunity to see a lot of different different maternal indexes, and stability really accounts for about 53 to 77% of the total value of those maternal indexes. So it's a very large value trait when it comes to cow production. So stability, you know, it's an easy trait to collect data on because we're used to using the same data you're always collecting. We're collecting calf information. You know, we know contemporary group is just breeder of the cow and then breeder of each successive calf. The observations are binary, 0 and 1. So a 1 considers a successful stability observation. A 1 means that this female has reached her 6 years of age, or she has a calf at 6 years of age. A 0 means she does not. Okay, and given that binary nature, we have to do some different things to analyze, and we refer to that as a threshold model. But the resulting predictions, you know, are expressed as a probability. So this is similar to some of the Cavanese evaluations, heifer pregnancy evaluations that are out there. So if we look at these two hypothetical sires, A and B, one, A has an EPD of 0 and B has an EPD of 10, okay? We can say that B will have daughters in a herd that have a 10% greater probability of reaching 5 years of age. Or we can say that he has 10% more daughters that reach 6 years of age than sire A. So it's really sort of a measure of longevity through reproductive efficiency. So I pulled up a lot of different genetic trends here. These are a few of the breed associations that we currently run stability genetic evaluations for. And we're seeing we're all making progress. You know, it's breed dependent, it's stability definition dependent. Every different breed association has a slight different tweak on what their stability definition is. But our rate of genetic change per year is anywhere from 0.33 to 1.23%. So, you know, it looks like it's a very steep curve here. But if you put that in relation to some of our growth traits, so some of our genetic trends that we're seeing for growth, it's really kind of a relatively flat genetic trend. And the reason for this is essentially some of the issues that are associated with stayability, and they're associated with just longevity issues in general. Okay? So one of the major points is accuracy and the age at which individuals begin to receive observation. So if you think about it, so if a female animal doesn't receive an observation for stayability until she's 6 years of age, okay, how old does that make her sire? Well, that puts her sire at 2 years older, so the sire will be 8 years of age. And so we're really influenced. These sires are gone before they really accumulate any accuracy to be selected for stayability. Okay? And I threw this equation up here, this delta G equation, and this is one of the equations we use for calculating this rate of genetic change. Okay? So, and here in the numerator, we have accuracy, this R, this correlation between breeding value and estimated breeding value is associated with the accuracy of prediction, or accuracy of the prediction that we're selecting upon. So the question is how can we increase this accuracy? Well, we do that a lot of ways in different evaluations by adding in correlated traits. You know, we're hearing a lot now about adding molecular breeding values or marker information in. But some of the things that we've done for stayability is we've measured at earlier ages. So we have the data at earlier ages. How does that relate to the six-year stayability? And then the other issue is just to use more data, and where I'm going with that is going to be a multi-breed evaluation for stayability. So first, let's talk about some of the aggregate stayability that we've done at CSU to sort of account for these earlier ages. Okay, so we know that stayability to 6 years of age is heritable, but what about stayability to 3 years of age? So they have two calves. You know, they have three calves or four calves. How do those relate to, are they heritable? One, and how do they relate to six-year stayability? Well, if you look at this chart, so this chart has the heritabilities on the diagonal and then the genetic correlations amongst each of the traits, okay? So a genetic correlation means that it's essentially the percent of genes that influence one trait that also influence the other. So if we look at that last column there and we say that stayability, so if we look at the first row, last column, we'll see a genetic correlation of 0.64 between stayability to 3 years of age and stayability to 6 years of age. So essentially what this means is that there's a 64% of the genes that influence 3 year stayability also influence 6 year stayability. So likewise, if we look down here at stayability to 5 years of age, we can say that 88% of the genes that are associated with 5 year stayability also influence 6 year stayability. Okay? So essentially what we've done is we have combined these four evaluations into one sort of aggregate stayability, okay? So we run four separate evaluations for each of the four endpoints, so 3 year, 4 year, 5 year, and 6 year, okay? And then we, using index methodology, we combine those into an aggregate 6 year observation using the heritabilities and genetic correlations between each of the traits. So the accuracy increases we're seeing. So we see an average accuracy increase of 0.07 and a maximum accuracy increase of 0.32. Now that's a huge accuracy increase for using some data that's already being collected that would have normally just been ignored. With multi-breed stayability, what we're essentially trying to do is get data on more animals, okay? So crossbred data is typically not included in a purebred evaluation, okay? So if we look at just an evaluation for any given breed, okay, we will typically throw out data on any animal that comes in the data set that's less than 50% of whatever the breed of interest is. So say if we're looking at Gelvie or Red Angus, and any animal that's less than 50% Gelvie or Red Angus, that data wouldn't be used to calculate their genetic prediction. So for a multi-breed stayability, we can include all of that data by accounting for base breed differences and accounting and adjusting out the heterosis values or these non-additive variation associated with our stayability phenotype in order to get a better prediction of our breeding value for the trait. Okay, and really what we're adjusting out here is this gene combination value, or these gene interactions that result in heterosis or hybrid vigor that are not transmittable to the subsequent generation. So, what does adding more data do? So, how will this essentially allow us to increase the rate of genetic change? Well, if we go back to this factors influencing genetic improvement, one, we've talked about using more data by increasing accuracy. Okay, so we're increasing accuracy, we're adding more data, we're going to have more accurate predictions. The other instance here is intensity. Someone was talking about intensity earlier, and I can't remember who exactly it was. They were talking about selection intensity. And it slipped my mind right now. But the selection intensity, evaluating more animals, is allowing us to choose from a bigger pool of genetic material. Okay, so if we have a bigger pool of genetic material to choose from, then we can theoretically be more choosy in those individuals we choose to become parents, and therefore increase our rate of genetic change. But the other thing that adjusting for this heterosis does, it allows us to have a cleaner, more precise estimate of heritability of stayability. Okay, so we have a more precise estimate of heritability or genetic variation associated with the trait that we're trying to improve. So how do we do this? Well, we don't actually fit or include in the model the improvement or the percent increase for heterosis. What we do is we calculate something that's called, I have this labeled here as RHV or retained hybrid vigor. But this is essentially an estimate of heterozygosity of an individual animal. And the way we do this is we sum up the percent of breeds in the parents for an individual. RHV ranges from 0 to 1, where 0 represents the straight bred animal and 1 is the F1 cross. Okay? So we're still analyzing this as categorical. We're including still the same contemporary group. We're including heterosis, and then we're including a main breed effect. Okay? So what this will do is it'll give us a heterosis estimate of what stayability. And then what we needed to do is we need to compare that to some sort of literature to make sure that, you know, all our model is jiving with what's previously been reported and what we think we should be seeing. So some of the results here. So heterosis does have an influence on stayability. So we saw that an increase in heterosis corresponded with an increase in stayability. This also increased, heterosis effect also increased with the stayability age endpoint, okay? So this age endpoint, so if we look at the 3, 4, and 5, so heterosis increased stayability 5.4%, 9.2% for stayability 4, and 10.9% for stayability to 5 years of age. So the next thing we wanted to do is we wanted to compare to literature, okay? But there are no literature estimates for heterosis on stayability. This is the first study that we're aware of that actually has looked at this. So what it forces us to do is sort of get creative to see where we fit in. So literature suggests that heterosis corresponds to an increase in longevity. Stayability is essentially an indicator, a measure of cow longevity. And this estimate or this increase can be as much as 38% depending on what breed cross you're looking at. Okay, so I essentially kind of I alluded to my next slide here. So how does this 11% increase compare to literature, given the fact that we have no literature heterosis estimates for stayability, all of our heterosis estimates are in cow longevity, and then we really have no Gelve Angus estimates to be found, okay, for longevity anyways. So the first thing that we did is we had to get a little creative. I don't know what the terminology for this I call it the fireworks chart. It looks kind of like a firework explosion from the 4th of July. But this is a chart presented by from data out of Clay Center to where they measured the genetic distance between different breeds using the 2000 Bull Project. Okay, so what they found is that they found some between breed heterozygosity between Angus and Gelvie to be 32%. Okay, so remember we're looking at heterosis or percent heterozygosity here. And they also found that between breed heterozygosity between Angus and Shorthorn to be 32%. So I'm trying to get at we're having about the same amount of heterozygosity between the two crosses. And then some earlier data out of Clay Center has estimated some Angus Shorthorn heterosis values for longevity, showing an increase of 0.93 years for the F1 animal. So the next step is how do we convert stability to longevity? I've kind of got that wording backwards here, longevity versus stability, but it should be how do we convert stability to longevity? Well, it took some simulation. So the first thing we did is we simulated a base herd, okay, and we adjusted the retention rate so we had about 50% of the calves or 50% of the cows present at 5 years of age, okay? So then we simulated another herd to where we increased that retention rate to we have an 11% increase in stability, so we had 61% of the females staying until 5 years of age. So then if you calculate the average age for each herd, the base herd was 5.29 years and the stability herd was 6.06 years. So that's an increase of 0.77 years. So if you remember, our literature, our heterosis was 0.93 years. So we're about in that same range there, depending on the cross. And this is a crude simulation on how we can convert stability to longevity. So really, some of the implications of this. These are our first reported estimates of stability, of heterosis influence on stability, okay? This has been implemented in a multi-breed stability evaluation that the association has published for the last, three rounds now, I believe. So, it's out there being implemented, and that's all I've got. I think I might have gone a little faster.
Whatever. That's all right.
It's the last one of the day.
So. We'll take any questions for
questions,
Scott.
Questions, comments?
You know, Scott, Larry kind of shows that classic chart. We shows the disappearance rate of the purebreds versus the crossbreds in the mark data. It'd be interesting to compare your 11% at 6 years to that chart. But I would... My guess is it's pretty close to that. You know the chart I'm talking about?
I do not, no.
You'll find it in his, he would, if you call Larry, he'll send it to you. They've got a chart where they've done showing the historical comparisons.
Okay.
And one of the questions, you haven't fit anything Indicus yet, right?
No Indicus.
Have you got any databases that are going to let you do that?
Possibly.
It'd be real interesting. You know, their classic estimation is that Indicus heterosis with the Taurus is 2X. And so when we've gone through and estimated that, we've just basically adjusted that to double the assumed heterozygosity on those animals.
That is something. I think we do have access to some of that data. I've done a little research looking at Indicus, so stability in Nelore cattle out of Brazil, and they're looking, obviously the Nelore are a little bit stay longer, they're later maturing, that sort of thing. So they've adjusted their stability endpoint, and it's actually later. I believe the one paper I was looking at was looking at a seven-year age endpoint. And I can't remember if it's the same number of calves that we're looking at, or if it's just the age adjusted, that sort of thing. But a lot of the stuff, it shows that there is that review paper by Thrift and Thrift and in the Professional Animal Scientists where they looked at various various stability or longevity factors associated with longevity between Taurus and Indicus type animals, and they show that there's a large influence in or Brahman influence in that. They don't report any specific values. I don't remember any specific values off the top of my head. There's a lot of numbers in there, so I'm trying to, you know, but if you want to look at it, I can pull that out for you.
And your average rate of genetic improvement on it was what percent per year across those multi-breeds?
So this wasn't the multi-breed. This was
No, it was within the breeds, but what was the average?
You're putting me on
less that. Than a percent per year?
Probably, yes. Probably. Before this, yeah. So I haven't really gone and relooked after this, yes.
So we can quote you as saying that heterosis will give you 10 years of selection and stability? Okay. I just wanted to make sure, Scott. Thanks.
I'm on Facebook, apparently.
more questions for Scott. Scott's kind of undersold this study a little bit, because what really stimulated this was when you did Gelvy analysis, they had, and a lot of breeds have breed derivative programs. So, but if you want to evaluate stability, the ability to incorporate data on crossbred animals was lacking without being able to adjust for heterosis. So this is really one of the first estimates. It is the first estimate we know of relative to heterosis that allows us to incorporate data on crossbred females that are coming out of some of these derivative projects. Now, in the bigger picture, this ties in with what Mike McNeil was talking about this morning relative to cow lifetime productivity, because if we can ever establish a system where we're leveraging some of that data coming out of commercial herds to add accuracy to our seed stock breeding programs, where fertility is a big influence on overall profitability, there's really value in doing that. And so this adds a lot to our base of knowledge relative to being able to leverage some of that commercial data coming out. Do you have a comment? Any other questions? Yeah, just a second.
Lee's going to ask the next question, so we just keep you running back and forth. Commercial producers that I deal with aren't that concerned about stability at 6 years of age, because they look at that as being a prime of their life. They're much more interested in 10 and 12 years. So I appreciate the repeated records, 1, 2, 3 up. Did you look at 7 and past at all?
We have not, no. The original definition of stability was that break-even point, and I understand that. And that's one of the criticisms Mike McNeil has about the trait. So he talked about this last year at BIF in Lincoln, and then he also alluded to it a little bit this morning, to where it's sort of an incomplete measure. It's not a true longevity measure. It's that break even point. That's so we have not looked further beyond that. No.
I'm late, and you may have already talked about this, but obviously the heterosis with the American breeds is way higher, but within British breeds and British breeds times continental breeds, what are the relative values of those estimates for heterosis in the cow?
So the estimates of for heterosis, they were the initial point of this was the Gelvy, the balancer, so the Gelvy Angus cross. But realistically, when we start, a lot of these associations have a lot of different breed percentages in their database. Okay, and Gelvy's one of them. So we've really tried to separate out heterosis or breed percentage corresponding to Angus, and then I think there's Simmental, Angus, Charolais, and then we grouped a general Indicus in there, and then a continental other and a British other breed type. Okay, so this heterosis value is all-encompassing of those breeds. So it's really, I think when I first looked at that data set and the number of different breeds that were in there, it was astonishing. I was really surprised that there was that many different breed types. So, but that's all-encompassing. So this heterosis, so we have a 2, 3, 4, and 5 is 10.9, and 6 year is 12%. So one of the issues we had with the Gelby data is they really didn't start total herd reporting until 2000. Is Carrie in here? I believe she was in here earlier. So it was the year 2000. So when we did this, we really didn't have that much 6 year stayability data. We didn't have enough to fully estimate a heterosis value for that 6 year of age. So what we did is in this simulation. The simulation, actually, we looked and simulated 5 years, and our heterosis associated with each of the endpoints lined up with our values here of 5% and 9%. So we extrapolated that out to 6 and looked at, and 6 worked out to be a 12% increase in stability. So is that the question? Did I answer what I think you asked anyways?
I just, and I don't. Kind of background,
more as background and probably not, but does anybody know what those maternal heterosis are, say, for a British breed time British breed and British times continental and British times American?
This is just an average of all of those, yes. But individually, no. I don't have those. We didn't look at it specifically between cross.
Any other questions for Scott? If not, let's thank him and we'll finish the session.